Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show kicking off hour two on a Monday, and we had football over the weekend. For the most part, the favorites kind of took care of their business. But again, it wasn't supposed to be a weekend full of close matchups. It was, a Hawaii team coming over from the island and taking on a UCLA team, which was supposed to be a lot better, and maybe this is the season that, finally gels, which against a team that normally doesn't play a lot of defense, but there are a lot of reasons to expect Hawaii to be better on that side of the ball. I'm not kidding, I'll skip every last one of them, but they're supposed to be better. Well, UCLA ran the football, and it looked a lot like what it's kind of supposed to with their quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And so you've got a kid, Trigger Man, there that is already got one game under his belt, and they got out of it, I assume. I haven't heard anything about injury, so they got out of that kind of unseat. And it's a week of experience for a team that is supposed to be kind of achieving something, finally getting to the top of that first big hill on the roller coaster, and LSU coming in this weekend. So that was among the games this weekend. When I say the favorites mostly took care of business, that does not include Nebraska, who looked about as poor as you could in a season opener, especially for a team that I know has more talent than the opponent. Well, they went on the road. That didn't matter in Illinois. It just doesn't. So we had games this weekend, and everything really kicks off this. And I've been saying 5 days. We actually have a game on Wednesday. UAB is playing someone, maybe Jacksonville State, maybe. UAB's playing. Find out who UAB is playing. But that starts actually Wednesday night and goes all the way through. It'll actually be a six-day opening, quote, week one of college football when Thursday. I think Ohio State's a Friday night game this week. That Thursday night. Okay, we got Friday night football as well. Then all day Saturday and then Sunday and Monday. That's how it goes. Right now, let me get you up to date.
Thing you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365.
Headline, Oklahoma Tulane opener moved to Norman. That is due to Hurricane Ida. You can see this a bunch of places. I saw it at the Athletic. But Hurricane Ida, the home game at Yulman Stadium there on the campus of Tulane, it's just not a place you're going to play football right now. You're concerned with things like power, cellular service, emergency services, et cetera. And so you're just not going to divert anything to put on a football game. It doesn't fit. It's not proper right now. Saints, I think that the New Orleans Saints, in fact, their words were, quote, unrealistic for them to have a return to their practice facility right now. So Oklahoma Tulane has been moved, and again, it's a proper response. Speaking of Oklahoma, headline, OU transfer Mordecai wins SMU starting quarterback job. According to ESPN, which good enough for me, they're saying, according to a source, so ESPN sources, that Oklahoma transfer Tanner Mordecai, he is a former four-star. He at times has backed up Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, and Spence Rattler, and he beat out Preston Stone, who was actually a four-star recruit to Southern Methodist. He chose SMU. LSU, Texas, Southern Cal, Penn State, and Tanner Mordecai, again, who he got a scholarship from Bob Stoops and Lincoln Riley, for gosh sake. So he's got his credentials, and so he's going to be a starting quarterback in college football. Good for him. This is a big deal, and I just need to figure out in my brain how this works. Headline, Gators add Auburn transfer D lineman. Well, that would be Tyrone Truesdale. And Tyrone Truesdale, who left the Auburn team, what is today, Monday? I think this was 2 Mondays ago we got the word that, and he was a 2-year starter. He played a lot of ball. Upperclassman, he's a graduate, coming back for one more year. And 2 weeks ago, yeah, I'm not going to play there anymore. That he had left the team, or the team had kind of told him he was going to leave, whatever happened. And so he hits the portal. Well, he has landed at UF. Again, a 2-year starter at defensive tackle, has played for 4 years there, got an extra year, and so he entered the portal. If he's a graduate transfer, I suppose he's immediately eligible regardless of the 1-year exemption. I don't know that he's graduated, but if he's a graduate, then he can. But if it's the 1-year exemption, which, and the reason I'm saying this is because I had seen that cited. Well, he's got the 1 year. You had to do that by July 1st. That's my understanding. But it's being reported, and you can find this a lot of different places, that he's transferred to Florida and is eligible to play, like, this coming weekend. That's what's being reported. Consider yourself up to date. There's one more, actually, Oklahoma news, and sort of SEC thing. I don't know where the kid's going to wind up, but Kevontre Bradford, he is a running back out of Texas that I was confusing with the kid out of, I believe, Reston, who wound up decommitting from Louisiana Tech. Kevontre Bradford was a running back out of the state of Texas, Lancaster, Texas. It's a 4-star running back who went to LSU. And then he left LSU, transferred to Oklahoma. Well, he's left the OU team now. Running back's pretty dang instinctive. I mean, you have to be enrolled and taking classes somewhere. I mean, that change, along with all the other changes, that one's still in place. You have to actually be attending a college to play college football. And Kevontre Bradford will have up to 4 seasons of eligibility wherever he lands next, because last year didn't count. This could be his transfer year because it's too late for him to declare. Like, he could say, I'm going to Minnesota. All right, you transferred. You can practice with Minnesota. Well, I want to play. Immediately eligible. No, you had to do that by July 1st. That's my understanding. So he's left the team. There's no word about portal or Minnesota or anywhere. But it's just that he's no longer with the team because he was probably going to be the 4th or 5th running back there. So, and he had a hamstring injury back in spring, so it wasn't working. All right, we're going to break. Come back. Continue the show on a Monday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And we start big time completely over the weekend, this coming weekend. And one of the big programs that is not so much of a big program anymore, I was talking about Friday night games, and North Carolina is the only ranked team taking the field this Friday night. I ain't who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Virginia Tech. That's not a big program anymore. That's just another team on your schedule that, well, yeah, they've got pretty good players, and that's as far as I can go with the Hokies. Here is what was supposed to happen this season. I don't even know, because of what's going on in Rocky Top, if this will be the case. See, this following statement, it is supposed to be a giant compliment that pays dividends to wherever Justin Fuente is. It hasn't been. There's never been a quarterback who has played better after leaving Justin Fuente. There has never been a quarterback who has played for him as either a position coach, coordinator, head coach, who has then played better after he left. Never happened. I thought it was going to happen this year with Hendon Hooker. I thought that maybe just getting free into that system, which is not necessarily about great quarterback play, but it's about racking up some numbers. I thought that at least on the surface, you'd have Hendon Hooker play better, quote, again, but just pile up all kind of numbers, play better after leaving Justin Fuente than he actually played in Blacksburg. And if you go back and look, you know what Hendon Hooker did for Virginia Tech? He plays pretty good football over time. So this Friday, 6 o'clock local kick there, Lane Stadium in Blacksburg. Virginia Tech hosts North Carolina. And if you go back in time, the Virginia Tech program, I think Frank Beamer took over there maybe in 1986, and you're talking about a program to that point which it had always been the exception. Oh, Virginia Tech's in a bowl game? They had a quarterback named Don Strock back in the early 70s who then went on to play for mostly Don Shula in the pros. But he was the backup for Dan Marino. That's kind of Don Strock's big claim to fame. And he came off the bench, played in a just an epic playoff game as well against the Chargers. But he was kind of like, oh, yeah, Don Strock, Virginia Tech. And then that was it. And Virginia Tech was a program that just kind of buoyed along. And ever so often, they would win enough games to go to a bowl, and that would be nice. But most years, they wouldn't, and nobody was necessarily too upset about it. Then Frank Beamer happened. Then Frank Beamer and Bud Foster happened. And after sort of stopping the bleeding, because it even took Frank Beamer, who we know what the program eventually became, and we also, there was a path to it. And this is no knock against Frank Beamer. He brought in some players that maybe some others had backed off of in recruiting or that maybe some other programs had backed off of after the kid had arrived. Was it, you know, Sing Sing South? No, not saying that at all. But I'm saying, for instance, with the attitude, for instance, this is a great with the attitude towards intercollegiate athletics in Charlottesville, that's UVA. At UVA, it's intercollegiate athletics. In Blacksburg, it's college football, by God. And so there's a different outlook. And so in direct comparison to the interstate rival, yes. You look at the type of kid that was coming into the Virginia Tech program, and a lot of times they'd wind up in the papers for reasons other than maybe the Wahoos players. But they also wound up being, for about a decade and a half, a legitimate conversation for a national championship contender. And now they're just another program. Like I said, to this point, there has never been a quarterback that has played better after he left Justin Fuente, whether it was to another school, to the NFL. Like, Andy Dalton was better playing for him at TCU than he was in the NFL, in my opinion. That was supposed to happen. I don't even think that weird streak is going to continue because Hendon Hooker's not going to get the snaps in Knoxville. But Virginia Tech, they take the field on Friday night. Again, you talk about a tough opener, and again, at home against a team that could win the ACC because they're good enough in that 60-minute framework to beat Clemson and Charlotte. Absolutely, it could happen. All right, folks, huge game, huge season ahead for LSU, but huge game way over on the West Coast this coming weekend against UCLA, who has already played and won and looked good. Man who covers them for The Advocate, it is Wilson Alexander. Wilson, how are you today? And I mean that literally. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I don't think I can say that for everybody who lives in Louisiana right now, but I'm doing all right today. I appreciate you having me on, Chuck.
Have you relocated to somewhere else? Are you in Houston with the team? What are you doing? What's your personal plan?
Yeah, myself and my girlfriend and her brother, who are from Houma, which was really battered by this storm. We are all in Baton Rouge, and we left before the team actually decided to leave to Houston, and just sort of ended up being the same place the team went to. And we'll whether or not I leave here for UCLA, I don't know quite yet. Depends on flights and power outages and all those sorts of things. But we're doing all right over, at least over here. But just thinking about everybody back home.
Yeah, and that's the real life subject. And we talked about that to start the show. There obviously is still the football business to be taken care of. It is a big challenge when you even if you're just doing it 5 or 6 days early, to add another leg to a road trip and to kind of be on the road for a week before you head out west, this is a big challenge for the LSU team. And I was trying to impress upon people, I was like, we got to acknowledge this. Even if they go out there and win, which is what we expect, they need some credit because this is a big, big issue when you're trying to get a team ready to get to play a ball game.
Absolutely. All of a sudden, and sort of the, within a day, you have to decide. You know, we talked to Ed on Thursday, and they were going to monitor the weather. But at that time, no, I don't. You know, Ida wasn't projected. I think at that point, it wasn't yet projected to be a Category 4, almost Category 5 hurricane. And, you know, it looked like it was going to be a rough storm, but not necessarily something to make everybody leave, particularly out of Baton Rouge, and, you know, uproot the entire football operations. But it became that, and they had to do that really quickly. And look, you know, LSU is sort of has experience having to do that, unfortunately. But yeah, still, I mean, buses packed with pads and jugs machines and all the equipment that you need, and Powerade, you know, and all this stuff, all these 18-wheelers and buses all, you know, left at 9:45 Saturday night after their mock game, final mock game in Tiger Stadium, and didn't get to Houston until 8 a.m. Sunday because of just how bad the evacuation traffic was. But everybody got here safely, and that's obviously the most important thing. But, yeah, now all of a sudden you have to relocate for a week, and though they can maybe get settled in and try to make things as normal as possible, it's unusual conditions, particularly the week before your first game.
All right, so we know who the quarterback is going to be, and barring injuries, Max Johnson. I've been wondering what the offense is going to look like. There's obviously a lot of speculation that some of that run-pass option, getting him on the move, that's going to be limited because now the only backup is a true freshman. You buy into that? What do you think the O is going to look like?
Yeah, they're going to try to schematically look somewhat similar to 2019. They sort of look the same schematically as last year, but it kind of get back to a little bit of, there's going to be a lot of, I think, misdirection, motion, but really the whole concept is get playmakers in space and get them the ball as quick as possible. Max is going to be, you know, you don't want to say game manager, but his whole mindset is like, I just need to distribute the ball effectively to these guys who we have on the perimeter. It's going to be interesting, though. Yeah, I mean, they like Max's legs, but he's not necessarily like, you know, it's not like he's out there running a 4.5 40. So I don't think he was ever going to be, you know, like they were going to be running him, you know, 15, 20 times a game. But maybe they would have had a few designed runs. Those probably aren't going to happen as much because, like I said, you know, your only backup on scholarship now is freshman Garrett Nussmeier, who they really like, but maybe not yet to start a game. If he has to, you know, they feel confident in him. But, you know, they're going to go with Max. But if he goes down, they feel good about Garrett. But it's going to be kind of interesting to see what this offense looks like exactly. But, you know, they're trying to get back to that 2019 level production, which is, of course, sort of almost otherworldly. But they're going to get as close as they can.
Last thing for you, specifically running back workload rotations. Is there going to be a plow horse? Is it going to be 33 1/3% for a few guys? What do you expect? And then do you know, or is this just what you expect? We got about 30, 45 seconds here.
This is just what I expect. This is probably the most peculiar position throughout camp. Ty Davis Price and Don Emery, two juniors, you know, the first in line, but they have been in and out of practice. Ty in particular has not practiced much at all this preseason, and Ed has put a lot on them, and he said flat out they haven't been consistent in the preseason in terms of how much they practiced. And so the freshmen are going to get some opportunities. This first game is going to be really sort of pivotal for how the running back rotation works out. It could end up being pretty heavy on the freshmen. Those juniors are going to get the first crack at it as long as they're healthy.
Wilson Alexander from The Advocate. Stay healthy, man. I really mean that. Enjoy your trip out to UCLA, okay?
I appreciate you having me.
All right, Wilson Alexander again from The Advocate. And so much that, you know, I liked it better when it was just the virus. I mean, can you say that? Oh, yeah, I didn't need a Cat 4 hurricane. I liked it better when it was just the virus. So dealing with a whole lot, as everybody in Louisiana and obviously LSU is.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the Sub-Sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I think I'm giving you up-to-date information. OU and Tulane scheduled for this weekend in New Orleans, Yulman Stadium on the campus of Tulane. That has been moved. Well, that was me about an hour ago, and I was giving you sources from ESPN. I was like, well, if ESPN's got sources, then good enough for me. And that absolutely could be eventually the outcome. But as I'm seeing it now, I think the Tulane athletic director, he's speaking up going, wait a minute, we haven't confirmed anything yet. This is still our game. It could be. You've got, again, the Saints saying we can't get anywhere near our practice facility, just not realistic. Maybe the last raindrop has fallen in New Orleans. But, again, you're still only, I mean, what, 4 or 5 days from game day? And any sort of dedication of whether it's resources, manpower, whomever, it's just that's a real tough scenario. So, again, I don't know where the game's going to be played. I just know what is being reported by ESPN. Speaking of OU, want to welcome on. I'm going to call him a good friend of this program here. He has hosted The Rush. That is on Sports Talk 1400 every afternoon out yonder in Norman. It is Tyler McComas. Tyler, how are you today?
I'm wondering if we're going to watch a football game this Saturday or not, because I'm starting to think that maybe now there's a possibility that, forget about playing it in Norman, maybe this game's not played at all, which was a shock 30 minutes ago. But I think that that's kind of where we could be, you know, slightly trending right now, Chuck.
Yeah, we'll obviously find out. This is a fluid situation. But as you and I are speaking right now, what is your latest understanding, or is it just a bunch of possibilities? Because right now that's all I have is possibilities.
Yeah, I think it's possibilities. I mean, I trust everyone around here, and I mean, OU's not feeding false information, but I think they were really under the impression that this game was going to get moved here. OU and Tulane were going to play on Saturday, but it really throws a giant curveball when Tulane's AD Troy Dannon is saying, I can confirm no decision on the football game this week has been finalized. So I'm starting to think that there are two possibilities right now. Playing in New Orleans is not one of them. Playing in Birmingham at Legion Field is not one of them. Either right now this game's being played in Norman, or it's not going to be played at all. That's my best guess at this moment right now.
Well, when OU does take the field, what is the chance that – and, again, I don't know if Tulane, this is going to be a competitive thing. They're better than – I've told people, Tulane's better than you realize. And maybe on campus and all things being equal with weather and fans, you know, there was a shot for, you know, some magic to happen. Oklahoma is so much better than Tulane. They may be better than everybody in America. Start with the quarterback, Spence Rattler. He could be a Heisman Trophy winner this year. I don't think that that's a provocative statement in the least.
Well, no, because he's the favorite to win the award, I think, by most betting services going into the year. Now, you know, does the media have OU quarterback fatigue a little bit with that award? That's certainly the case. And, man, if I'm trying to win the Heisman Trophy, I don't know if I'd want to be the front runner to start the year. That's kind of seemingly the worst place to be starting out. I mean, look at Tua back in, what was that, 2018. Tua was the leader from week one all the way to the SEC championship game. But, of course, he gets hurt. Jalen Hurts comes in, and Kyler has a great game against Texas, and he loses it on the final week. So it's almost like if you're the front runner, people look for any and every reason to kind of knock you off of that. So, yeah, he definitely has a chance to win it. He's definitely going to have the numbers to win it, but not exactly where you want to start off, Chuck, as being number one to start the year.
All right, so Kevontre Bradford has left the team. I haven't seen portal or anything else. I don't know that it, you know, he might have been the fourth running back maybe. Let's go a little further up the food trough. Kennedy Brooks, Eric Gray, break down for me what this is going to look like in the backfield this year.
They have two scholarship running backs on the roster right now. Two scholarship running backs. They've lost, what, three guys this offseason? Kevontre Bradford, I guess, apparently he's just going to go back to LSU. Yeah. LSU was contacting him, and he's just like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do, go back to LSU. You had the situation with Mikey Henderson. You had the situation with Seth McGowan. Those were two guys that were involved in an armed robbery and are no longer on the team. So all of a sudden, this running back room is really it has no depth to it at all. Now, the good news is that your 1-2 guys, they got pretty good resumes. Kennedy Brooks has a really good resume. 2,000-yard rushing seasons, he's going to be your number two guy. And then Eric Gray coming out of Tennessee, he's going to be your number one guy. So if they're just able to stay healthy and to stay out of trouble, they should be okay. That 1-2 duo right there should be good enough to get you back to the college football playoff. Man, Chuck, if we're talking about another injury at that spot, if we're talking about someone, you know, popping a positive COVID test before a big game, now OU could be in a situation where they only have one scholarship running back for a big game. And, you know, they're discussing the potential right now of moving guys to other positions just to have bodies to play that spot. Jeremiah Hall's a really good player for them at H-back. He's going to get some carries this year. He's probably going to be your number three guy. It has just been an awful situation. Just last week they lost two. Marcus Major, ineligible for the year. So we're talking about OU losing four scholarship running backs this offseason. That's how they found themselves in this spot, and it's not good. It's by far and away the biggest concern on the team now all of a sudden.
Flip it around to defense, because I don't think I'm overspeaking here. Now, you're not old enough. You weren't around for this. But Barry Switzer used to win national titles by running the ball like 75 times every Saturday and being impossible to score on. That really hasn't been what OU's been on defense in a while. I expect this to be the best Oklahoma defense in at least 20 years. Go ahead.
Yeah, Switzer would also fumble six times per game too, Chuck. You can't forget about that.
Yeah, and he may recover about half of them, so, you know, it'd be fine.
Right.
But this defense, it's not like Big 12 good, because that's what some – and my hand's raised, by the way, Tyler. You know, it's good for the Big 12. No, this is like national championship-level good defense, and that's in my opinion. Drill down a little bit on it.
You're talking about the best D-lines in college football this year. You got to throw Clemson in that group. You probably got to throw Bam in that group, certainly Georgia. I really don't think I'm overstating it. I think that OU belongs in that group this year. And it's not just because they have, you know, two really good players that could be All-Americans. No, that's not the case. It's not that their front four are just really good. No, they got depth, man. They've got seven. They got eight guys that have played, can really, really play at a high level. You know, right, when you think about OU here recently, of course all you think about is the offense. But the defensive line is their best position group. It's their deepest position group. They've got dudes on the edge. They got dudes on the middle. It's incredible the line that they've been able to kind of develop over the course of this past 2 to 3 years with this new defensive staff. Yeah, I mean, the expectation here is to have a top 10 defense nationally. And I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. I think, one, they really are that good. And two, the Big 12's kind of shifted, you know? I mean, no longer
Absolutely.
Are you going to see three Big 12 teams in the top five of total offense. No, I mean, the identity's kind of shifted. There's not really a whole lot of offenses in the league this year that really scare you. Maybe Sark will have one of those offenses at Texas coming up here sometime soon, but Neil Brown has completely changed West Virginia. You have Dave Aranda, who's completely shifted Baylor, for sure. Oklahoma State's actually starting to play good defense now. It's not the same league that it was 5 years ago. You've got some defense out here, but OU is going to lead the charge because they're so deep at D-line. They got a ton of guys at backer, and OU used to be just throwing out 5'8", 5'9", corners, and teams would just run go routes on them and basically throw up jump balls. They've got long, rangy, athletic. They look like they just look finally like an SEC defense. They've got to prove it this year that they're on that level, but I think that they will, and I think that that's what we're talking about with the main story of Oklahoma is, oh, wow, they not only do they have a defense, they have a really, really good one. This will be their best defense in over a decade, easily.
All right, somebody who at some point had backed up Spence Rattler, among others, and Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts, Tanner Mordecai, I was mentioning him earlier. And by the way, I want full disclosure, folks, This is just for the fantasy players out there, all right? Because this is if you play Prize Picks or DraftKings or whatever, give us a lowdown on Tanner Mordecai, because he got that job for Sonny Dykes at SMU, and that means he's going to get to throw the ball some. Give everybody a bird's eye of Tanner Mordecai and what this season could be for him.
Good arm, really good player. What, he beat out the highest ranked recruit that SMU has had in a long, long time. Or how about this, Chuck? The highest rated recruit that SMU didn't give a Trans Am to, right?
That, yeah, Post Pony like that. Express, yes, exactly.
For. Yeah, right, yeah. So, no, he's a good player, man, and he'll also have Grant Calcaterra to throw to.
Yeah, the tight end.
Who was a former Sooner as well. He was at Auburn, left Auburn to go to SMU. He made quite a bit of nice plays during his career at Oklahoma, including the Big 12 Championship in 2018. So, you know, the numbers that we saw Garrett Gilbert put up at SMU, I think that this is very a season like that for Tanner Mordecai is definitely in the cards. I mean, I'd be surprised if he doesn't have, you know, statistically one of the better passing seasons, not only in all of the AAC, but maybe in the entire country.
All right, last thing, and I'm going to give you an opportunity to be mature here, okay? Because taking pleasure in the misfortune of others is not a sign of maturity. I have to imagine everybody in the state enjoyed Saturday's Illinois-Nebraska game.
Yeah, it was weird, you know, because we're talking, you know, is it better for OU if Nebraska wins? And then it's, you know, maybe it makes the game a little bit more intriguing. Yeah, but it's like, not really. I mean, OU's not going to get credit for that Nebraska win one way or the other. I mean, everyone obviously recognizes that used to be something. But even going back to the latter days of the Big 12, when you only play them twice out of 4 years, you only get them in Norman once out of every four,
yeah,
that had already lost its luster anyway. So I don't think really anyone was just kind of sitting around here pointing and laughing at Nebraska fans. I think at this point, everyone feels really sorry for them. And it's going to be kind of a weird vibe when they come to Norman. And it's like everyone's going to put their arms around them and say, well, maybe you'll get good again someday. There's no hate here towards that fan base.
Yeah, it's just a weird spot for that rivalry, because I've said it used to be, you know, a lot of times it was that day after Thanksgiving, that Friday sometimes, or it'd be that Saturday. And I was like, folks, it was one of the three best games of the entire season, whether you were a fan or not. And that's the reason I'm asking, because they play, I think, week five or six maybe?
Yeah, they played week three, September 18th.
Oh, okay, week three earlier, yeah. And so I'm like, yeah, you don't want them limping in there and for this to be such a – oh, I was kind of looking forward to it, but maybe I'm not, because they don't look like it's going to be much of a competitive thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. For decades, it was one of the biggest games on the schedule, and yep. I know that this will shock people in the South, but that rivalry, at least around here and up in Lincoln, there's always been like a massive respect. You know, I'm not saying that there's never been trash talk between the two programs, yep, but for like a big-time college football rivalry, it's probably like the most tame out of maybe anyone that we've ever seen before, because of the respect of both sides.
And it was usually kind of the de facto play-in game for the Orange Bowl as well. Way back in the days of the old Big Eight. Tyler, I appreciate it as always, man. Thanks for coming on, making time today. Thank you.
You got it, Chuck.
All right, Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma, Nebraska. It was the season finale for both. It wasn't Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. They played them a couple of weeks earlier. And Nebraska had obviously no in-state rival. And so in the Big Eight, there were only eight of them. In the Big Eight, after they had dispatched of Iowa State and Missouri and the rest of the conference, then it would always be Oklahoma and Nebraska at the end of the season. And this is going to be like, go if you're younger than like 40, go look this up. Beginning in like the late 50s, definitely into the early 60s, Oklahoma and Nebraska, they were good almost every single year. And virtually every time they played, maybe a top 20 matchup, it may be a top 10 matchup, it may be a top 5 matchup. I know that there were at least two instances, I think there were two instances, of when it was a top 2 matchup. 1 versus 2. And I'm going to guess, Dan, check this, maybe 71 and maybe 87 or so, either 71, 72, the Johnny Rogers year. And then I think in 87 it might have been 1 versus 2 as well. They had a couple of instances of that. And so it was something that even if you were a boy growing up in the South and had no intent to ever even step foot inside the state of Oklahoma or Nebraska, then you still watch that game. Or you could have been, I don't know, growing up in Honolulu. Oh, Oklahoma, Nebraska's on? It's going to be. I thought it was a little closer to the middle of the season. If it's week three, there's no room or no time for you to even kind of get your legs underneath you at that point. Like, this is supposed to be a game that just by the packaging. Oh, OU, Nebraska? Oh, Nebraska's 0-3. What do you got, Dan?
78-87.
78, and it was 87. There you go. Oh, and you know what might have happened?
71, too, I believe.
Okay, so it was 71. That was the Johnny R. Superstar year. That doesn't mean anything to Johnny Rogers, won the Heisman. I believe in the 78 year, they may have played in the regular season finale, and I believe they had a rematch in the Orange Bowl. Check either one of those teams. They may have played each other again later, like a month later in the Orange Bowl. But that's what the matchup was. I even left out the 78 season. There was one of those where they did that. What?
They did. November 11th, they played against each other, and Nebraska won that one. Then they lost to Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, you used to have about 6 weeks off between the end of the season. And sometimes if you were playing a January 1st bowl or sometimes a January 2nd bowl, that's as late as they'd move them back. But yeah, I had when you said the 78 season, I'm like, wait a minute, I think they played each other in the Orange Bowl again. That's how tight it was. And this against the backdrop of what happened in Champaign the other day, I wish I was right and it was like week six. All right, Nebraska, put a little juice on this game, all right? Get up for it a little bit. Make it into something. They come limping into that. Oh, yeah, I saw them in week one or week zero. They got waxed by Illinois. Oh, and they're going to play. I bet you that number, I'm sure there's a line that has already been released. That number will be mid-20s, if not higher. I have no idea what the number could be. There's future plays for a lot of big games. By the time we get to game week, yeah, you're talking, I don't know, 24.5. That's not supposed to be. That is actually going to be a bad thing for Nebraska that game is scheduled for this year, and not just because of the loss. Like, you could play Alabama and get blown out. You could play, Penn State and get blown out. You're going to play this team, this rivalry, this game, this matchup, this history, this heritage, this legacy. All you're going to play all of that and get blown out. All right, we're going to break. Come back. Wrap up next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
College football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Why not more of the same? Keep feeding him. Charbonnet refuses to go down, and he'll go the distance. 47 yards for his second score in his UCLA debut.
ESPN's broadcast of UCLA and Hawaii. Beth Mullins talking about Zach Charbonnet. He's a former Michigan running back. He got in the end zone twice. And by the way, that was the longer of the two touchdown runs. That was the end of the first quarter, folks, and this thing was basically over. They were up 24-3 at that point, and Charbonnet went for north of 100 on, I mean, had like six carries on the day. Had six carries, over 100 yards, got in the end zone a couple of times. Dorian Thompson-Robinson again. Really good-looking, I'll say, trigger man for what it is that Chip Kelly wants to get done. They think they can run the ball on LSU. They think they can run the ball on anybody this year. They think they can run the ball on LSU, and they got off to a great start. Rainbow Warriors didn't bring quite as much as LSU will, but it was a good opener. And again, UCLA's already got something in under their belt. Dan Matthews being here in just a minute, but right now I'm going to wrap it up with the closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments, presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
Expect Nebraska to be the latest program to choose sanctions over a buyout. Kansas, Tennessee, Arizona with Rich Rod. This is officially a strategy now, and strategy is capital S. And Nebraska is next, especially if Saturday is a reflection of what the 2021 season will be in Lincoln. The administration will take a loss of scholarships and fewer off-campus visits in exchange for being able to not pay their soon-to-be ex-head coach Scott Frost $15 million in buyout. When I talk about the choice being made, there's been a shift, and it was always us against them, us as anyone connected with the athletic department against them, everybody outside these walls, specifically the NCAA. Now, it's more of an us against us, as in Kansas building the case against David Beatty, as in Kansas building the case against Les Miles, Tennessee building a case against Jeremy Pruitt. I said in December, these are the kind of secrets that come out from your worst enemy. It was the president at the University of Tennessee. Again, Arizona with Rich Rodriguez. Yes, we would rather build a case where we have sanctions. We would rather build a case where it's for cause than actually pay you the multi-million dollar buyout that is required in almost every case. $12 million with Pruitt, $4 million with Beatty. In this case, it might be $15 million. Nebraska wants to win. I'm convinced they just don't want to win right now with this coach. That's what to expect in December. Consider yourself up to date. That is my closing argument. Dan, how are you today?
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. This all goes back to, and by the way, to your point, if they do find cause, Scott Frost is gone midseason. If they find it as soon as that, he's out of here. I mean, especially his fate was sealed on Saturday with that. But this all goes back to the number one lesson that I think every single AD and Board of Regents and president of a school has now learned is it's like the lesson that Ezra in the movie Ocean's 11 had for Brad Pitt and George Clooney's character. When they start naming off the casinos they're going to hit, and he says, those are Terry Benedict's places. And his thing was, you better have a plan if you're going to go after Terry Benedict, because if you don't, then Terry Benedict's coming after you. In this case right here, when you were moving on from Frank Solich because 9-3 was not good enough for you, I got news for you. Bill Callahan should not have been good enough for you. But let's fast forward to now, the next guy. I think he's perfect, Chuck, and I think that this would be a home run hire if indeed they pull this off. Tom Herman can take this job, and Tom Herman can win at Nebraska.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that is going to be available, and you know about the last go-around when he was sort of on the market as UH's head coach. He was the prize. He was the bell of the ball. Maybe another round of that this coming December, except he's a lot more attainable. All right, wraps it up on a Monday, folks. 22 hours from now, be back as we continue. It's game week, folks. It'll be Tuesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, getting you ready for this weekend.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.